freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go, Brock, with another post-Super Bowl version of the Brock and Salk podcast. And it's not just now the NFL offseason. It's someone else's time to shine. It's not just NFL offseason, Brock. I mean, it is. That's where we're at. Getting close to baseball season. Pitchers and catchers here in just a few days.
Yeah.
A week away. It's Mark Rogers season.
Oh.
It's Mark Rogers season now.
No.
Who's not excited?
Not me.
Hey, it's Mark Rogers season. Now, this year...
The groundhog-sized shadow. Yay.
This year, Mark Rogers season comes with a little extra bonus. Not only does Mark Rogers start his squawking, which you know is going to happen, but guess who's going to join him this year?
Who?
Russell Wilson.
Oh, personally? What?
Personally.
No.
Personally.
He likes to use like shell organizations for this.
Normally, yes. He's got a whole series of shell companies set up.
He hides his opinions like money in
There's
foreign
no
bank
paper
accounts.
Trail.
He's heavy into cryptocurrency with this
sure.
stuff. Over the
his
last
money's
decade.
Coming through a Bahamian bank account
to
back
Islands.
To the Cayman Islands and
for
then to
sure.
Switzerland. Normally, that's where Russell's opinions go. But this year, not only... Is he using Switzerland to not pay taxes on his opinions? He's also paying taxes on his opinions. Never before thought
wow.
this would happen.
Credit so, to him.
Credit, yes.
Standing behind his opinions,
yes.
personally.
Yes.
Maybe.
So
yeah.
we got a lot to sort through here, buddy. We've got Mark Rogers talking to, I'm sorry, just sources close to Russell's camp. It's
you
not
know,
Mark
You know
Rogers.
What happens when we assume,
It's
Mike.
Not Mark Rogers just specifically talking to Jason LaConfora and telling him that he's hearing Russell Wilson's camp has grown increasingly frustrated by the Seahawks' inability to protect the eight-time Pro Bowler. He's been sacked 394 times in 9 seasons. The situation warrants serious monitoring. If it were just that, I think the four of us would laugh, right? We go, up, oh, Mark Rogers, back to his usual tricks, no biggie. But this comes with a little extra because Russ went on Dan Patrick's show, Brock.
He did.
And Dan, by the way, we'll play you the cut here. Dan not having it from Russ. Like, Russ tried to pull his, like, you know, I'm just sitting here and I, you know, say nothing over
Oh, don't look at me. I didn't cover me. I don't know.
Right. I'll talk for 5 minutes so that this interview runs out of time and that's the end of it. Dan's got enough juice that he just jumped right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, but that's a long-winded way of not answering my question. Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that, you know, for
Do you
for me,
want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
Russ can need an offensive lineman to protect him from Dan Patrick.
Dan getting a little feisty in his orders.
Is somebody asking huh? real questions?
Don't you come onto my show and not answer anything. I will own you. I'm Dan Patrick.
Fired up.
Yeah.
Hopefully he doesn't need one of these 5 offensive linemen to protect him.
No.
He's just taking shots of these guys left and right.
No kidding.
No respect for this crew.
None.
Thanks for your service, boys.
Yeah, it goes on. Here's a little more.
Yeah, I definitely believe the guy in calls for sure. I think that, you know, I think anytime you're a player that tries to produce every week and has done it for, you know, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. But I think also, I think more than anything else is, you know, I think at the end of the day, you want to win. You know, you play this game every day to wake up to win. You play this game, you know, to be the best in the world. You know, you know what I hate? I hate sitting there watching other guys play the game.
Wow. When was this? When did this come out?
That's Tuesday morning.
Yeah, Tuesday morning.
Wow, Russ. You're right. We have never in 10 years. It always has been his camp or his court or the people around him. These are, let me just say this very clearly, these are really dangerous waters you're treading in, Mr. Wilson. You've navigated this beautifully. You really have for 9 years. Like you've from August to January, you never, ever have thrown anyone under the bus. You've never flinched. You've never cast blame. Your peers, Aaron Rodgers, my buddy Peyton, some of them have flinched at times and pointed fingers at protection or coordinators or other people. He never, ever has in 9 years. And I think it's one of his crowning assets and just abilities. I'd be very, very careful starting to tread in these waters where you think you know personnel, where you think you know what this team needs to do, where you think you can do another man's job. So I'd be very, very careful.
What's the danger?
You just you separate yourself even further from your teammates. You put yourself in, as most franchise quarterbacks already are, and as we've been and told that story years ago, and with the bitterness of some of the folks in that locker room with, well, he's a brown noser, well, he's management, well, he gets treated differently, well, he's not held accountable, well, all of those things that you fight anyway because of the position you're in and the income that you make, right? In the revenue that you do make and you do create and everything else, you are in a different position than everybody else. And then now if you go down this road, you further that gap in distance. To me, that's the extreme danger, and you can poison the well. You can poison the well.
With who? With your teammates?
With your teammates, with your offensive line, with your offensive players, with everybody else that is working and playing and sacrificing. And you know, let's just also face it. You're not a GM. You are not a scout. You are an amazing franchise quarterback, yeah. But you are not those things. You don't spend every minute of every day and all your energy towards that and studying guys and studying prospects. You don't know your salary cap ins and outs. You don't know how to build a team. That is not your job. And, you know, once you think you can start to navigate that ship and you know just as much, I think it can create a lot of tension and a lot of dissension in the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tempted to wonder, you know, the timing of this, I think, is interesting. Why now? I mean, on one hand, you know, you would think this is the time Russ feels closest to his offensive line. We're heading into the offseason where he looks more like an offensive lineman than he does a quarterback. So this is generally the time he's closer to them.
Is this a shot? He's pitching the Seahawks on his... like second
hey guys,
career,
yeah.
Like, hey, I'll moonlight.
He
here.
Says to Patrick he wants to play 10, 15 more years, and you know, it's off season Russ. Like, he goes up about 50 pounds. So this is the time where he's, you know, kind of looking offensive lineman like. But
see that tweet from Jason Lockham from Pete Carroll's camp, worried about Russell Wilson's weight gain.
No kidding.
Pete Carroll's 240 camp. Bones.
Jane Salk worried about Russell Wilson's weight. She
Your
saw
mom
him,
is?
Yes.
Oh no,
dude, she saw him in the owner's box, and she's like, that suit doesn't fit him.
Why? Well, it did a month ago.
I know. Well, she's actually legitimately wondered, with Russ's money, why he doesn't have an off-season wardrobe and a regular season wardrobe. Because for all of the jokes we've made about Russ's weight in the past, come regular season, he's got it locked in. He's ready to go. So this is a joke. I'm not worried about Russ's weight. I've learned that lesson.
It's mostly a joke. But we're getting into the stage. Like, if he wants to talk about his sack rate,
right,
then we're going to have to start to talk about his escapability.
That's all very fair. But, yeah, my mom's like, well, why doesn't he have an off-season wardrobe and a regular season wardrobe? He can afford it. Why would Sierra let him leave the house that way? So
brilliant.
That was my mom. That was her conversation, her observations from the Super Bowl. No, Brock, the timing of this, and my question really is, why now, after they made the change at offensive coordinator and by all accounts brought in a guy that Russ likes?
Correct.
The Seahawks go out of their way. They bring you into the process. You have some level of input on what happens. Are you just feeling entitled by that? Are you upset about the way it went down? Why, after the goodwill olive branch that was given to you, why now?
Because he put the squeeze on it.
Not you. You're not a named person on this show. You're not Brock Heward. Go sit over there, Howdy.
No, what did he say? I couldn't hear him.
It doesn't matter. Brock, why now?
Well, it was about this time last year, right? It was about this time last year. It was actually the Pro Bowl where Russell said what? Like, we need more stars. I got knocked out of the playoffs. Not good enough. Need more stars.
So you think he's mad because they didn't get him?
I mean...
he's been hanging on to this and holding on to it. And this
Jamal Adams is a star.
Got Jamal Adams. I mean, geez.
Carlos Dunlap turned out to be a star.
Russ convinced them Greg Olsen was a star.
Right. I mean, like, let's calm down here. Howdy, what was your reason? Just kidding. What was your why now?
Because they didn't go out and get stars on the offensive line. They specifically went out and scraped the bargain basement barrel. Just like they always do with the offensive line, and did not get the top talent.
So I got to tell you, if that's all this is, if this is just a reaction to watching the Super Bowl, and he had the same reaction I did, which is, you know, good luck. All this other stuff is bubkis if you don't have the offensive line to protect against the defensive line the way Kansas City apparently did not. If this is just a petulant reaction to what he saw, I can have a petulant reaction. I'm not even on the radio anymore. I'm some stupid podcast host. Like, okay, I can be petulant and be like, well, got to have an offensive line. They blew it. Like, okay, who cares?
And by the way.
He can't do that. He's a quarterback.
Well, and by the way.
It's why it came from his camp. Mike.
Not anymore.
Let's be very clear. You're also a podcast host that thought it would be a good idea to trade Tom Brady years ago.
I nailed that one.
You did.
Yeah, I was dead right.
That was when
though, they had Matt Cassel at the time, and the guy had won 11 games the year before. Why wouldn't you trade Tom?
That wasn't during your sabbatical when you went back there,
no,
was it?
No, that was long before I came. Okay, that was before I even came here. That's how long ago I thought the Patriots should trade Tom Brady. It was before I had even moved to Seattle to start the show the first time in 2008.
Brady only had like 4 rings at that point.
He had 3 rings.
And you wonder why I told Rod Arquette.
And he was busy touring around Europe in the offseason.
Sure.
He wasn't winning the parking space as the top offseason workout guy anymore. And I was like, maybe it's time to move on, get a ton of draft picks.
I'm done with him.
No, not that. Just what you could get back might be worth more than what Tom brings to the table in the Patriots system. I was incorrect.
And you're wondering why I told Rod Arquette and Lundberg one I couldn't work with you.
Right.
You didn't think I did my homework?
I know.
This guy wanted to trade Tom Brady.
Well, and I don't want to trade Russell Wilson either. Franchise quarterbacks, who've been saying it throughout the offseason, they're more important probably than the coach. So if this does come down to that battle, it'll be interesting to see how battle lines are drawn. But hopefully we don't get there. Hopefully this is just Russ being a little petulant after seeing what he saw in the Super Bowl, what we all saw. Which is, doesn't matter who your offensive coordinator is. I don't care what kind of a genius Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are together. It doesn't matter if you can't protect. Patrick Mahomes might be the best quarterback, might be the best athlete on the planet right now. It is completely irrelevant if the moment you drop back to pass, Jason Pierre-Paul is in your lap.
Yes.
The same way it is for Russ. I don't care whether it's Shoddy or any, you know, bring back, what was the guy's name, Jed the Fish?
Jed Fish, head coach at Arizona, Mike.
I don't care.
Jeremy Bates.
I don't care if it's Jeremy Bates. I don't care if it's Daryl Bevel. I don't care if it's Pete's kid. It doesn't matter what you've schemed if the moment you drop back to pass, Aaron Donald is in your face. It's irrelevant.
Two decades later, it all comes back full circle. As Tom Moore was hugging Bruce Arians on the sidelines post-game, celebrating, I could just so clearly picture Tom Moore in 2003 with the Colts sitting up front. It doesn't matter. I can draw this play up on toilet paper. If we can't protect, just flush it down the toilet. So, yes. Yep, that's exactly right. If you can't protect, go ahead. Drop all these pretty schemes right on toilet paper and flush it right down the toilet. Mm. And, yeah, there is no question. A decade into this league, as Russell looks at himself and realizes athletically, from a dynamic athletic standpoint, it had to be kind of crazy watching it, right? Because he watched it and went, yeah, that was me, man. In fact, my very first game where I really won the job was against the Chiefs in preseason game number 3, making plays like Patrick Mahomes, running 4 or 5, you know, avoiding everything, just an absolute wizard. That was me, you know, years ago. And then looking at the other end of the spectrum going, and if I'm going to play till I'm 43, then that's going to have to be me at that stage of the career with a line and play action and being able to get the ball out and having primary receivers that are open and 13 of my completions are play action pass and I don't have people in my face and I can still manipulate the pocket and I can still step up and around and do the things I got to do like Tom does in the pocket, but I can't keep doing what I used to do and what that kid's doing. And oh, by the way, that kid now has a dislocated kneecap and then he's going to have turf toe surgery, Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, I mean, he's going to get beat down and worn down as well. That's the progression. If you're going to run around and get hit. 394 times and add on, I don't know, another 1,000 with QB pressures and scrambles and hits and everything else. So, yeah, I bet, you know, Russ is a smart dude. He's a processor. He took that all in and talked to Dan Patrick and said, yeah, man, we got to be better up front. Have to be better up front. And then Russell's camp also makes that very, very clear to anybody that's willing to listen.
Here's what's a little challenging about all this. He's right.
He is?
He's right.
Yes, he is.
They do need to be better up front. And I know everyone, you know, this has been my argument now for a few weeks. I don't mean to like kind of pat myself on the back here, but this is what I've been saying.
No, go ahead and do
Why
it.
Why did they lose the Rams game? Oh, it's because of the scheme. No, it wasn't. It wasn't because of the scheme. It wasn't because of Brian Schottenheimer. It wasn't because of the scheme. It's because they lost the turnover battle and because they couldn't protect Russell. That's why they lost. They couldn't protect their quarterback. Go check the tape. Set it the next day. Why did the Seahawks lose? Lost the turnover battle. And I do still believe there's a chance they win that game if they don't turn over the ball at the end with DJ Reed fumbling it. But okay, fine. You lost a turnover battle. You gave up a pick six. You turned the ball over late. And you couldn't protect your quarterback.
Yep.
Well, the turnover things come and go, right? I mean, I don't know that you can plan for that over the course of a game. You can't. That doesn't give you something to do when you're off season. This does. Your offensive line was not good enough, and I believe, as I'm sure does Russ, that they made a mistake this offseason, last offseason, that they should have gone and gotten Jack Conklin for the same money they spent on, you know, three guys, yep. Three Jags.
Yep.
Right? Like, if you could have gotten Jack Conklin instead of three guys who are just a guy, you're probably better. Right?
Oh, there's no question. You're actually able to block Leonard Floyd. You can block him instead of being unable to block him and have him sack Russell seven times in three games against him.
Jeez. So Russell's right. He's right about this argument. His camp is right that the inability to protect him is frustrating, that it's been years of this garbage that Russ has had to run around and look like Patrick Mahomes did in the Super Bowl. There's been years of it, not to mention how it's caused them problems running the ball. And I mean, like, the problems are all over. Russell's right. And yet, it doesn't feel right for him to go out and say it this way, especially after you would think he said it to the team. You would think this has happened in the conversations around Schottenheimer and bringing in new people. Like, I have to imagine that this conversation is going on. Like, what is John Schneider thinking right now? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, your kid, like, really? Like, we don't know? Thanks, Russ. Russ knows that everybody involved has a long-term deal. John just got one. Pete just got one. He's got one. He's untradeable this year because of the dead money the Seahawks would have to take. It'd be a franchise ruiner. So what is the upside here of going public with this? What, you put pressure on the Seahawks? You're going to try to make Pete look like he bows to you? Is that the goal? That's not man of the year stuff, buddy. I'm proud of Russ. I think winning man of the year, Walter Payton man of the year award, we should be spending some time on this podcast. And I had it written into our notes to talk about it today before any of this other crap came out.
Yep.
It was on my list of things to talk about because I think it's amazing. I think it speaks to this incredible character that Russ has had from day one, going to Children's Hospital every week since he arrived in Seattle. He does good in the community. To win Walter Payton Man of the Year is an unreal honor for Russell Wilson, and I'm willing to bet it means the world to him. Coupling it with this, it's like one of those, it's a, what's Two-Face? The guy from, is it Batman who has Two-Face? Yeah. It's like Two-Face. Like, on one side, you're sitting here doing great things in the community, and then the other side, what? You're stabbing your coach and your GM and your organization and your offensive line and everybody else in the back? Why?
Yeah.
It just feels so preposterously unnecessary.
Well, I think the word you use there, the best word, it just feels petty. It just feels petty, and you're so much above that. And to have to be on the back pedal and the attack and step up and around a Dan Patrick interview, what is the upside? What is the upside of doing that?
I just don't get it. I don't get it. And by the way, and this has to be added to it as well, because let me repeat again. I think Russ is right. He is right. And yet, he's not without responsibility in this whole
Correct.
Thing.
Correct. Absolutely.
At all.
he holds the ball longer than he should. Sometimes when he escapes, it ends up leading to those touchdowns he mentions, and sometimes it ends up leading to sacks for, you know, longer yards. He threw some bad picks this year that had nothing to do with pressure. I mean, like, all those things come up. And by the way, and I think it was Bob Condotta had some of this research this week showing that, you know, quarterbacks don't win when they take up 20% of the cap. They win either, I think the highest in the last few years is Brady at like 10.5 or 12.5, something like that. They tend not to win when they're at 20% of the cap as Russell. And by the way, now Patrick Mahomes are going to be interesting to see what happens to the Chiefs window now that they're going to have to spend an additional, what, $19 million on Patrick Mahomes over what they were spending before, or something close to that.
And that percentage goes up as the cap goes down this year.
That's right. So, you know, Russ is not without fault in this. The offensive line hasn't been good enough. Maybe the scheming hasn't been good enough. The development maybe hasn't been good enough. But also, Russ hasn't always been good enough, and he's played a role in it as well. And so you say, okay, well, should he give back some money in order for them to go, okay, maybe that's what this is about for Russ. Maybe this is about, all right, I've set the stage for all this. I'm going to go be the savior. I am going to give you money. I'm going to take less. I'm going to restructure whatever it is he's got to do to take something closer to a Tom Brady deal. But he gets the right to sort of dictate how that money is being spent. And if you're the Seahawks, how do you feel about that? So this, you know, I understand the argument if you're John Schneider being like, dude, I'm just going to ignore it. I don't care what you have to say. You can be mad all you want. You do your job, I'll do mine. But what if Russ says to you, all right, I'll give you $10 million to play with somehow. I don't know how that works. I don't know if that's the right amount. $7 million. I'll give you a Greg Olson size salary to play with if you need it.
I won't demand Greg Olson this year.
Hopefully not. I'll give you $7 million additional to whatever else you have by restructuring or changing my... I don't know how all that stuff works, nor do I want to, quite frankly. What do you say if you're John? Yeah, of course, that sounds great. Oh, one caveat. I get to dictate how that money gets spent. What, are you going to say no if you're John Schneider? It's free money. Like, let's say you were at a blackjack table, or you're at a you're at a roulette table, and they say, all right, we're going to give you $100 to play at this roulette table. Okay, sounds good. Well, here's the caveat. We're going to tell you whether to put it on black or red, or, you know, even or odd, or what numbers. What, are you going to say no? Before this, you didn't have any money. They're giving you $100 extra to go play at the crap at the roulette table. All you've got to do is listen to their bets. Maybe you win, maybe you lose, but you can't lose. You can't give them more money than you've been handed. So the worst thing that can happen is that the money that has been given to you is wasted. What, do you say no if you're John Schneider?
So you think this is planned? You think this is part of the process? You think this is, hey, after the Super Bowl, we're going to do a little media tour. We're going to get to celebrate you and your Walter Payton Man of the Year. And you did a, you know, well-deserved and a phenomenal,
we're
phenomenal
gonna
honor.
We're all over it. Seems odd. I mean, it does, you know, on one hand, I believe that Russell doesn't do anything without it being very planned. On the other hand, this seems poorly drawn up, which brings us back to the very beginning of the podcast today. This has Mark Rogers written all over it. The bungling, the mistakes, the bad PR for yourself, the self-own that Russ ends. Like, this has Mark Rogers written all over it. And if Russ has any one fault in the over a decade that we've been around him, Brock, yeah, he can be boring at times with what he says. Yes, we can joke about how he tends to balloon up a little bit in the offseason. Is he perfect? No. But if he has any one actual flaw, to me, it's his relationship with Mark Rogers.
Well, it is, you know, you and I have disagreed about this a lot because he pays Mark Rogers, and Mark Rogers and his job.
That's why I'm saying it's a Russell Wilson flaw. Dump this guy.
He pays him for self-inflicted wounds.
That's right. Move on, Russ. Get rid of Mark Rogers. He is not helping you. He is doing a disservice to you and your career and your image and everything else. Stop complaining about the Seahawks. Stop listening to this knucklehead.
Well,
and get rid of him.
Yeah, I think Mark Rogers is a slice of that. He is not his entire PR team. He is, in Russell's world, Russell wants to be a mogul, and he's got in Ciara. Is it Ciara or Sierra?
Sierra.
The princess is here. Sierra.
He's got a lot of people around him, and I am sure some of it is, hey, listen. You know, and I'll circle back to why. You asked me earlier why and where does this come from and all that. I think this is also like, hey, man, your voice has got to become louder. You know, kind of like I did a year ago when you said, hey, man, we need more stars. Like you kind of stepped into that. You were just the nice guy, and the nice guy gets run over. And after a decade of what you have done and 8 Pro Bowls and everything, and you're on your way to the Hall of Fame, like you need to, and your voice needs to grow. And I don't think that's simply Mark Rogers in his ear directing his path.
I think that is
many in his team. I think that's many around him. Jake, I think that's Keats. Probably just about everybody around him.
I don't know, man. If that's the case, then they're giving him some bad advice as to how to do it. Because what we heard last year, go get some stars. We need some superstars. I don't think anybody doesn't get behind that. And by the way, that's something that doesn't really put pressure the same way on John Schneider. Like, okay, I hear what you're saying. Thanks. Like, yep. Your definition of a star might be different from mine. We're going to go out and put together the best team we want.
But when you're asked by Dan Patrick, you're a franchise quarterback. Play that one again.
No, before that, though. I mean, when you've got Mark Rogers in his camp.
Here's how we could succeed is different than here's how we have failed.
Right.
Like, oh, here's a plan. We could get stars. We could do this. Here's how I could envision success this year.
I'm increasingly frustrated that the Seahawks can't protect me.
Here's how they failed me.
Yeah, that doesn't play as well as last
year did. No, it
does not. Sorry.
No, it does not.
That's bad PR advice, if that's what it is.
I don't know. You guys say that he's been doing it wrong, but he's never gotten more conversation, and nobody's been more willing to talk about him taking the NFL by storm than they were at the start of this season. And why?
Yeah, but then
because of let Russ cook. Well, he failed in his performance. That's the only reason why this turned south. He finally got the attention he
needed. Now he's out there looking for scapegoats? That's a worse look. This is such a bad look for Russ. I can't stand it. And you know how much I love Russ and the high priest of Wilsonism and all of it. I hate this. I love him as a player. I love it. I love the way he plays. I'll still defend. I even when Russ has bad games, I'm like, whatever. The only thing he did wrong in my eyes this year were the games against the Cardinals and the Giants where he couldn't win it in the last 2 minutes. He didn't do anything else wrong for me this year. He had a bad game against Buffalo, bad game, first one against the Rams. That's fine. I don't expect him to be perfect, but hey, those two games you had a chance to win at the end. If you win them, even if you win, I think one of them, you get a first round bye. Yeah, that to me was the only problem that Russ had, and he bounced it off with some other great. What was it? The Miami game with the great win late, and the Minnesota game. Like he bounced them off with some really great drives at the ends of games. But I don't like this. I can't help it, man. I don't like this at all.
Yeah, let me. Can you play that other cut? The one about when Dan kind of comes at him about being a franchise quarterback. Well, you're the franchise. You're going to be a Seahawk, right? Let me hear that.
Yeah,
one
I definitely believe they've gotten calls for sure. I think that I think anytime you're a player that tries to produce every week and has done it for consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. But.
Yeah, I don't. That one, by the way, doesn't bother me. The I don't know if I'm available or not. I think he's just answering Dan's question.
That's where you say I'm a Seahawk, man. I'm a Seahawk.
He came back and said that though. He said, "I hope I play in Seattle for the rest of my career."
The reality of professional sports is, things happen, things change. I'm not sure, how long I'll play in Seattle. I think hopefully it was going to be forever. But things change obviously along the way and.
That's, by the way, Aaron Rodgers. That's what Aaron Rodgers said, and that's what he says. Yeah, well, it's not up to me. It's not my choice.
We'll see.
it's ugly.
It is ugly. And I'll tell you what, man. Actually, as I was thinking about this, my girls had a basketball game last night, and they played with a really talented gal that had a choice of her colleges across the country, and she tore her knee this last summer, so she's not playing this year, unfortunately, with the high school team. But she ended up signing, and I was talking to her dad last night, had a long conversation sitting by him, a great guy. And, we were talking about the different schools. I mean, these are the best, basketball schools in the country, and what was it? And he said, at the end, the coach spent 2 hours, the head coach of the school spent 2 hours breaking down her high school film, saying, this is what you're doing here. This is how we're going to use it, at our school. And then you're going to grow into this. And he's like, no other coach did that, to spend that kind of time to build that kind of trust. Those 394 sacks. If I'm Shane Waldron, right near the top of one of my to-do lists after meeting Mike Salk, BBN alum, number two on my list is going to be to spend 3 hours with Russell Wilson and walk through the sack reel of the last 2 years and have an honest and open and hopefully trust-building conversation. Let's walk through these. You were sacked 47 times in 2020, third in the league, only behind Carson Wentz's 50 and Deshaun Watson's 49. You're right there with those two guys. 4-12 for Deshaun, and Carson got benched and is going to get traded. So that
sounds
that's
like all three guys are going to be on different teams next year.
that's the camp you're in here. And I want to have an honest and open that's and trust-building and very clear conversation of what it's going to be moving forward. And we're going to look at 47 of them and how many of them were NCs. How many of them were no chance? You had no chance on this play, and you have every right to tell Dan Patrick it's got to get fixed, and maybe I need to be the one to help pick the guys because we've been a mess up front. Mm. And let's just see how many no-chancers versus how many change protection. How many you didn't see it? How many you held it for 4 seconds? How many, that was a negative play at the wrong time. Throw it away. Live to play another day. Like, have a legitimate conversation, because that has to happen. That you have to foster that relationship. That is what Jim Zorin was to Matt Hasselbeck in turning the corner in Seattle, that I witnessed, that I was around. That was Tony Dungy to Peyton Manning. Right? It's not about anybody else. That was Tony to Peyton. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the sack that, you know, was the critical play that cost us. And I'm willing to put it up in front of the whole team on Tell the Truth Monday. You know, if that's, you know, what exactly the truth is, and be honest about that and help turn the corner. And I think Peyton's career there and helped him win a world championship. So to me, that has to happen.
Do you think Russ can handle that?
He has to. He has to be a grown enough man to handle it.
Not what I asked you. Do you think he can? You answer my question. Dodge me.
That's a long-winded way of getting around my question. Yeah.
Well, I know this, Kyle. Our special guest that I texted you, he's going to be on in a couple minutes. Bruce Arians is going to join us. So can I answer that after?
You know, that's really, really unnecessary. Really unnecessary.
Yes, Mike, I do.
By the way,
head coach? I think Russell can handle it. I think Russell wants to. What did we hear? One of the great traits about Tom Brady this week, he wanted to be coached hard.
Russ has a tendency to kind of pick and choose which things he hears about and thinks about from the, like, well.
We've heard that from Shoddy, too. Oh, Russ likes to be Coach Hart.
Yeah, Shoddy's not here anymore.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's
that's not happening.
I think he can. Yeah. I don't know. That's probably a better question for the guru. And if the guru does some of that job and sitting down with Russ and being very honest and explicit and open about these areas that you do, I think he can, and I think he does. And I think that's a huge priority for Shane Waldron at this stage of his career, because if Russell is speaking publicly about this, then he needs to come around on the other side and say, you know what? I was sacked 47 times, and I did my work.
That can be harder for rookie offensive coordinator never called plays before than it would have been from Adam Gase, Anthony Lynn, Doug Peterson, some of the old veteran guys who I know the fan base was terrified of hiring. But that might be easier for one of those guys, and maybe that's one of the reasons Pete was interested in talking to some of them, not just the youth. And if Russ did end up forcing this to be one of the younger kids, you know, I can't help but wonder if there's some of that kind of bullying of like, yeah, I don't want, but I don't know. That's 100% speculation. By the way, has any Super Bowl winning head coach ever received less of the credit than Bruce Arians did on Sunday? Like, he was a non-story.
Isn't that how you prefer it?
Well,
you didn't want Bruce Arians.
Thank God.
Credit.
Yeah, no, I was happy that he did not. But it was interesting.
And even Bruce deflected. I mean, give credit to Bruce. He loved on his mom, and then he said, hey, listen, don't talk to me.
Coordinators.
Talk to these coordinators and players. Yeah. They're the ones that did it.
That's about right.
That's a pretty good turn.
It is.
Pretty good heel turn for Bruce.
Very surprising. Yeah, Bruce is better when he wins. It's when he loses and the excuses start coming out that you have some issues. All right, no excuses for anybody now. Ascend Prime Steak reopened, Brock. We're back. Woo. Limited indoor seating. I had a dinner out this week. It was great. Just being in a restaurant. Having at the end of the meal, someone's like, I'll just take that away from you now and clean it for you. Like, wait, I don't have to do it?
What?
Oh, this is
where are you taking it?
A+. You're just going to take this plate away? Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, well, who's going to do the dishes? Someone in the back.
Oh, thank God.
Not me. Someone other than me is going to do these dishes. It was awesome. So, all right, take in the unbelievable views. Brock, you've been to Ascend. We sat there. We've broken bread there. It's ridiculous. The views are insane, especially days like we've been having here, these bright, kind of wintry days. Be beautiful up there. It's open Tuesday through Saturday, 3 to 6 for happy hour. That's the time to go in the lounge. 5 to 11 in the dining room. You can still do Ascend at home, available daily if you'd rather eat at home. But Valentine's Day is coming up here, man. It's Sunday. They are booked up. Totally booked for Valentine's Day. Mm. So you're too late to do Ascend. But... I have good news for you. Four-course dining for two at home Valentine's Day from Ascend.
Ooh.
All right. Go to ascendprime.com. You can get all the information on the home Valentine's Day meal. Four-course dinner for two, or celebrate a late Valentine's Day, right? Skip the day of the of actual Valentine's
Day. It's one of my favorite things to do, by
absolutely.
The way.
You don't need to be out there on that day. No. Go like a few days later, have the Valentine's Day experience, but actually get into the restaurant you want to go to. And so you can always hit up Ascend later in the week. Again, go to ascendprime.com. Well, Brock, I got to say, I'm impressed. We're a half hour into this thing, and I figured that by now you would have jumped all over what happened to Spieth on Sunday and given it all back and being over on the day. I'm impressed that you've gone 30-plus minutes without crushing me for my jubilant Spieth excitement. I figured it would have happened by now.
He was so good.
He was so good on Saturday.
He was so good.
So good.
And you heard from so many in the golf world, like, yeah, man, the game is better. The sport's better when Jordan's in it. You could feel it there in the galleries, even though they were reduced, but it was nice to hear some fans and to see some folks there at, 16?
Did you hear the story of what happened with him pointing at that guy on 17?
No.
So for anybody who wasn't watching, Jordan Spieth finally got himself back in, and we're only going to spend a minute on this, I promise, but Jordan got back into it, shot 10 under on Saturday be the 54-hole leader. It was awesome. He was draining everything. And on 17, he hit this long putt that was not supposed to go in and did, and he pointed at some guy in the gallery and started laughing and pointing at him, and it looked like they were sort of playing back and forth. Well, as it turns out, the guy was getting arrested. Jordan didn't know it at the time. He was laughing about it afterwards. He's like, it turns out that guy was just getting arrested.
He's dressed like Borat.
He was dressed like Borat, and Jordan thought he had just fallen off his chair. But it turns out, like, he was actually being arrested. Then he's like, then I felt bad because it created even more of a commotion. Mm. And the police were after this guy and they're chasing each other. And he's like, and poor Billy Horschel had to putt. So I had to apologize to him for, like, making it loud during his putt.
Don't apologize to Billy Horschel. That's fine.
Jordan played all 3 days with Billy Horschel and played well with him. So don't knock that. Anyway, it was good to see crowds back there. And it was great to see Jordan in it until he kind of gave it back.
And then just the final day, he just couldn't make putts, huh?
Yeah, it really was that. I mean, he didn't play that differently from how he did early. I mean, he, at the end, kind of had to go for it and ended up putting him in the water. But, yeah, he just missed a few putts by, like, a few inches. And if those go in, there's a decent chance he ends up at the very least tied or right there with Koepka on Sunday. So, hey, it's a huge – what I love about Jordan Spieth so much, in addition to watching him play, is just the interviews with him. And the way he handles this stuff is awesome. If you, I watched like 15 minutes of his press conference after the round on Saturday.
I waited just to be, okay, we got to hear from Jordan. What's he got to say?
I went to Golf Channel after they're done on NBC and watched 15 minutes of him talking to the media because I think he gives a masterclass in it every time. He's amazing. I know you like to give him grief, Brock, about the Michael Greller thing, but their relationship is pretty strong. I don't know. The way he handles that pressure and talks about it and keeps expectations off of himself. It's pretty darn impressive.
And I hope he gets over the hump. Let's hope this gives him a little bit. I'm tired of making fun of him. That's why I didn't even bring it up in the first half hour.
I appreciate that. Thank you. That was very nice of you. I was worried all day Sunday that I kept looking at my phone like, is this text coming? I'm like, I was making my tachos for the Super Bowl and just worried that you're.
Nope, wouldn't do that to you.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, I probably would. I was a little distracted Sunday. We had some stuff going on. Okay, so, yeah.
Can I give you a hot take?
Oh, the first half hour wasn't hot enough?
No, that was reactionary. Okay. That was just reacting to what we were seeing. Watching the Super Bowl on Sunday, I think the Legion of Boom might be overrated.
Go on.
Not the whole defense, but just the guys in the secondary. They were really good, obviously. I don't want to take anything away. Just that they were a little overrated. Is that okay
don't
to
tell
say?
That to them.
Whoa.
No, I know. They're still mad because of the Super Bowl loss. They're very upset still.
They
can't
like
get over it.
Are in their own. They're building their own Hall of Fame somewhere in South Renton. their shrine to the Legion of Boom. Honorary member Doug Baldwin will be inducted as well.
Yeah, they're going to bring. It's going to be Doug Baldwin, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor.
Correct.
That will be the Legion of Boom Hall of Fame.
And then they lock the doors behind them.
Nobody
chain them shut.
Nobody ever enters. Yeah.
And they don't question our legacy.
They have like one of those like taxi driver style shrines to Russell Wilson where they're throwing darts at it all day.
Axe throwing.
It's like Pete on one side and Russ on the other. And they just throw stuff at those things all day.
I think that's somewhat of a hot, ridiculous take.
All right, let me tell you why, though. Can I give you the reason?
Yes, you can. Yep. Right. Yep.
I'm not sure that the secondary matters much without pressure. Like, just watching that game, like, Tampa secondary's fine. They're no LOB or anything. They held that team to 3 field goals in the game. Why? Because 4 beat 5, as you always say, Brock.
Yep.
And for all the talk about the LOB, obviously, I don't think they were bad. They were amazing. Of course, I don't want to, it's not revisionist history, but do we overrate their accomplishments and underrate what Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, Chris Clemens, Brandon Meebane, the rest of those guys up front, Bruce Irvin did in getting to the quarterback as often as they did? Let's not forget that as much as they like to blame what happened on the final play of that Super Bowl, that everything went haywire in the second half when Cliff Avril went out. And all of a sudden, the pressure on Brady went away. And then Brady started picking them apart, as vaunted as they all were. And yes, they were playing hurt. Cam was hurt, right? He'd hurt himself the day before. So, like, there's a lot of things that go into it. But that wasn't a problem in the first half when Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett were attacking Brady nonstop and putting him under all the pressure. In the second half, when Cliff got dinged up and couldn't go out there anymore, guess what? Everything changed. And I know that story gets sort of mentioned occasionally, but it's not the narrative.
Yeah.
The prevailing narrative is the Seahawks were perfect until that play. And the reality is that's not true. The reality is the Seahawks were playing an unbelievable game until Cliff Avril got hurt, and then Brady started storming back on them.
Yep.
I don't know.
It has some merit. There's absolutely some juice. And in fact, if you wanted to kind of go further, say, well, what was Brandon Browner after he was there? What was Byron Maxwell after he was there? What was Earl Thomas after he was there? What was Richard when he went to San Fran and didn't have a pass rush the first year? And I mean, you can kind of spin some of that script. But I would say that what they brought was as much as their coverage, it was just their persona. It was just their, you're not going to throw on us. Mm-hmm. It was Richard taking the ball away at a historic rate. It was Cam knocking the daylights out of you.
All those
knocking
Vernon. Awesome.
What was the tight end? Vernon Davis. His eyeballs were scrambled. Tolbert, the 260-pound fullback, was sideways. It was, you're going to, you know, anybody.
Does anybody that work if Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, Chris Clemens, et cetera, aren't forcing quarterbacks to do everything they force them to do?
I think those guys are still as violent as any secondary. And that's what turned. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, the league then looked at and went, wow, look what you can. I mean, Brandon Browner's knock-kneed and runs a 4.8, but that guy just chokes people out. And Cam is 6'2", 225, and his maybe short area quickness and turn and run and everything is a little limited, but he will knock you out. And Richard is 6'3", and is a ball hawk. And I think it just changed. It just changed so much of the paradigm of how defense is played and how personnel was viewed on that end of it, Mike. So I think it's a little bit hot. I do understand it took both of them. Mm. It took peanut butter and jelly to make the sandwich.
Yes.
And you're absolutely right that group up front did not get near the credit they deserve.
I guess, yes, all those things are true. And I guess that's why these conversations, it's hard to be subtle about them. But they're overrated is different from they weren't good. Does that make sense? They were awesome. They were amazing. They're one of, if not the best secondary we've ever watched, and the fun factor and all of that. But it's interesting how in the narrative that sort of like the history, right,
yes,
what's remembered, all yes, anybody remembers, oh, it's the Legion of Boom. They were incredible. That was the difference maker. And they helped put them over the top. Of course they did. They made huge plays. But gosh, do we kind of forget about how good they were up front? And Bennett and Avril and, God, I mean, those guys were
game
wreckers.
Yes,
constantly.
And look at it. I mean, Tampa Bay, you know, won that Super Bowl, and a huge part of the pie chart was that group up front. I mean, and what they did constantly hitting and harassing, 30 times? I believe Mahomes was hitting that game.
Partly,
what they did the week before.
That game
sacking
was won up yes front by the Tampa Bay front four.
Yes, it was.
End of story. That is the entire, like, to me, first of all, boring Super Bowl, not fun to watch, down 4%, 4 million viewers from a year ago. meh halftime show, wasn't good, wasn't bad. Meh, Jim Nance and Tony Romo, like, kind of boring. Like, just sort of everything about the Super Bowl, I thought, from start to finish was kind of meh.
Agreed.
But it was very specifically won by the Tampa Bay front four.
As was the Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos 5 years ago with Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware. As was the Super Bowls with the New York Giants and the NASCAR package. Yep. And there was Mario Manningham, and there were a couple big plays. But yeah, I mean, that is the way you can win. That is the way you can offset some other flaws. That is the way that, you know, that basic of math equations, that if you can win that one and you can develop that one, you can go all the way to winning the Super Bowl, as we have seen. And for those groups, they got the credit up front. And I think I hear what you're saying, you know, those 50 sacks and everything that Bennett and Averill and that entire defensive line did to help set the table for Bobby and KJ and furthermore set the table for the guys on the back end. Mm-hmm. They never really got their complete due.
Well, and it kind of leads me forward. It brings me to kind of two conclusions for the Seahawks moving forward. I mean, yeah, you can make changes with your offensive coordinator. Yeah, Eric Bieniemy sure looked great, I thought, in the Super Bowl. Thank God that he and Andy Reid, who get all the credit, and they deserve it for throughout the year, doesn't matter what they schemed.
Nope.
Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid, or Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, I'm not trying to single one out over the other. They both got a ton of credit during the regular season. They didn't do squat in the Super Bowl.
Nope.
They didn't do squat.
Well, they did. They went scat protection 92% of the time and got destroyed. Did not put two tight ends on the field. Did not put a fullback on the field. Did not commit to the run. Just said, yeah, we're going to do what we do. It doesn't matter that we've got backup tackles to backup tackles. Yeah, we do what we do. No, you don't. No, you don't. Not against that pass rush, you don't. And they got embarrassed.
The conversation is so interesting today because Russ is right. The conclusion that you can't help but draw after watching that Super Bowl is the Seahawks need help up front. Their offensive line needs to be better. The other conclusion that has to come with that is their defensive line needs to be better. And it did get better over the course of this last year. Adding Carlos Dunlap obviously was a huge thing, right? Jaron Reed played better once Dunlap showed up. I mean, like, they've drafted some, like, there are some hope for that. But I guess I keep coming back to, and I feel like I'm picking on a lot of sacred cows, and I don't mean to, but it does seem like we're sort of at that point right now. Russ is kind of being petulant, I think. And the other guy that unfortunately kind of comes in the crosshairs here is Bobby. And not because he's bad, not because he's a jerk, quite the opposite. Bobby's still a great player, and Bobby Wagner is arguably he's one of the best humans on this team. I love Bobby Wagner. Love his leadership. Love the way he plays on the field. Love the way he acts off the field. Love the way he stepped up into that role a few years ago when it wasn't really necessarily what he wanted to do, but everyone else was gone, and so somebody else was going to have to be the vocal leader, and he took it on and I think did a great job with it over the last few years.
And put his ego aside when that Legion of Boom was barking, and as far as the credit share, like, was just fine with he and KJ not getting nearly the amount of credit that they could have been due.
But as you look at it and say, okay, if defensive line and getting to the quarterback and what you can do with your four against their five, can you afford to keep paying Bobby what you're paying him?
No.
I don't know how else to come to another conclusion. It's not about disrespect or anything else, just about how you build a team.
Correct.
How do you pay Bobby Wagner what you're paying him and still expect to move forward and have more success than you've had? I don't see how it works.
And with, you know, an enormous list of free agents that you're going to have to deal with, and a Jamal Adams that you're going to have to prioritize and try to get signed.
I don't know how you prioritize him either and spend the kind of money that he wants, except for the fact that at least he gets to the quarterback. And maybe
Correct.
You're just going to say, He's an honorary part of my D-line.
Yes.
I mean, that's a weird way of building a roster. But, hey, I don't mind a little zigging when everyone else is zagging. But
yep.
you got to be set across that front line, man. You've got to be able to get to the quarterback and dominate with your four. And, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul and Vita Vey and the rest of that, like, they just dominated.
They did.
They dominated.
They did. And then you saw the other side that couldn't. Right. And Frank Clark and Chris Jones are very good players. But when you face an elite offensive line and arguably when that crew is all together with Marpet and Jensen and Wirfs, the right tackle, like, that's
I like the name Wirfs, by the way. That's a great name Wirfs. For an offensive lineman.
And that dude may have had the biggest legs of any human I saw in college at Iowa. I mean, a gigantic man that could move. And, you know, they took him number 8 overall. And I think it was Daniel Jeremiah that was tweeting after the game, like, you know, kudos to the Buccaneers, because they took the very best player available when it was Devin White and it was Tristan Wirfs and it was Vita Vea and it was a nose tackle and a right tackle and a hit and run linebacker that you don't normally prioritize as top 20 picks. They did. And top 10 picks, they did. And they were right. And those guys were absolute monsters. And Tom Brady in his pocket, in his play action game, and his jersey compared to Mr. Mahomes after that game told the entire story.
Are there people out there that don't like Patrick Mahomes?
I don't know many. Certainly not in the home I was rooting in and people that I was around, Titus and Haley both have for different reasons. Yeah, Haley thinks he's hot and Titus just loves him. So
right. I'm sure Haley would love that you're spreading that information out there.
What's that?
Yeah.
What would I say?
What? Were you not here? Were you not part of the conversation?
Are we on the air still?
Yeah.
I'm just teasing.
What's going on here? Too many hits to the head? Are there people that don't like Patrick Mahomes?
I can't imagine.
He seems
like
one of the most universally liked athletes.
And how about after the game, by the way? Just owning it. Just owning every bit of that. Well, worst loss. Had never played a game like that in the NFL. Never gotten beaten like that. Never played a game where he didn't score a touchdown probably since.
Ever.
Ever.
I wonder what happens there now, too, because this is his last year making, you know, 0% of the cap or whatever it is. Next year, he gets the big money, right? So, you know, they're looking at it, and I follow some people in Kansas City. And, oh, they need a, you know, wide receiver too, and we need a right tackle, and we need this, and we need that. Like, okay.
Good
luck.
Wait
till instead of going to find those guys, you have to get rid of the guys you have.
Yep.
They get a little respite next year. He makes $25 million on the cap next year.
Okay. But which is still what?
Something.
What's the cap going to be?
180, 170, 182.
Okay, so it's still like 15% or so. So yeah. Very.
It's the year after where it gets real.
Okay,
crazy.
So you might have one more kind of, you know, work up to it, and then it goes nuts.
Yep.
So yeah, let's. I'll be curious to see where, like, how he handles
31,
this.
31, 42, 30,
oof.
39.
Oof.
Put a Brock 42. Watch on that.
Yeah.
Rob, could you give us a dental watch on that, please?
That's a 2-2-2.
Right
two,
now.
Three, two,
it's
going to
be a 4-4-3 in another year or so. Yeah. We'll be very curious to see what happens there.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello, Blue 88, Brock. Let's finish it up with some good football questions, starting with this one. Kansas City back-to-back getting to the Super Bowl. Was it a challenge for them to get back there?
It, I think, was the easiest path that we have seen in the last couple decades. And I think it will be much more difficult for Tampa. I think it will be much more difficult for anybody else moving forward, Mike, because I don't think we're hopefully going to have a COVID-19 pandemic like we've suffered through for the last year. And that actually played to the benefit of the Chiefs. And that's not just me saying that. That was Andy Reid at the end of the year. I remember doing the Chargers-Chiefs game to wrap it up. And we had that conversation, you know, and they were going to sit a bunch of starters, number one seed. How about being a repeat and all the distractions? And Andy Reid's like, distractions? There were no distractions. He said, like, you know, after winning the Super Bowl, he's like, I went to a steakhouse one time and got a standing ovation, and then everything was shut down. Like, there were no parties. There was no distractions. There was no guys getting out of shape. There was no, I'm going to fly around the world. None of that happened.
Getting fat and sassy.
None of that. None of that, right? And I don't know if that got talked about very much. And I was certainly thinking about that as the Chiefs were back, as we're, you know, seeking a repeat, which hadn't been done in a long, long time. And ultimately, they didn't get it done. But yeah, it's going to be, you know, a different world for Tampa here eventually. I think things will turn a little bit. I think they will have to handle a little bit more of that distraction. And being a veteran team and Tom Brady and the game's greatest of all time will mitigate some of that. But yeah, it was an advantage this last year. I don't think there's any question about it. The Chiefs didn't make any qualms about it, that they didn't have the normal fat and sassy and all of the distractions that come with being a champion that some of the former foes had faced.
All right, question number two. know, a lot of conversation, rightly so, about the front four for Tampa. But, man, those two linebackers are pretty good, too, huh?
My goodness. And Devin White was hilarious. I don't know if you watched any. You probably didn't watch any of the post game, but he had his champagne goggles on and was just, you know, kind of furious about, yeah, you know, I guess we only had one pro bowler. We only had one pro bowler on the whole team. Yeah, only one pro bowler. Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, you just watch the speed, Mike, with which he and Levante David play. And, you know, it was unique. It was different. That's where this league is trending. That's where Jordan Brooks is not quite Devin White. He's not 4.48 or what have you. But you can see why the Seahawks went that way at the end of the first round in last year's draft. That in this day and age, with the RPO game and the kind of caliber of tight ends that you're going to have to play against and guys at that intermediate level, you have to run. You have to be a heat-seeking missile in both the run game and, just as importantly, in the pass game. And when you watch Levante David and Devin White and those guys cover and those guys run and the amount of space that they can just, you know, just get in and out of so quickly, it really, to me, begs a question about Bobby and KJ at this stage. You know, KJ did a phenomenal job. I think he found the right fit on the line of scrimmage. I think he could probably play that role for another year, maybe two in this league, depending on the health of his knees and his legs and everything else. But, man, to think that, you know, Bobby was first team all pro and those guys didn't get a sniff of it, you can understand their level of disrespect.
All right, question number three. Seahawks, as we know, Brock, and you mention this every year, they like to take care of their own first and figure out who they are bringing back. What are your first two targets for the Seahawks?
Well, it has to be Jamal Adams. You have to figure that one out first. You've already that is the sunk cost, right? You've already made that move. You've already given up the two firsts and the third, and you know that is the domino that then sets the table for everything else. So you've got to figure out what the cap is. It looks like, on a positive note, it's not going to be as low as first anticipated. I think I saw a number of 175 kind of thrown about over the course of the year. I saw a more recent number of 185. It will probably settle somewhere between those two. So you will have some wiggle room, but nothing can really be done. No other move can be made until you take care of the biggest piece of the pie for this team, and that is going to be Jamal Adams. Looks like he's had surgery on his fingers. He had surgery on one of his labrums. We'll see if he has surgery on the other one. I don't think you're going to count on him being a participant in any offseason. You just hope by the time training camp comes around that he can start to practice and be an influencer. But getting him done is first and top priority, and then it's how much space do you have left. And for me, the next guy would be Carlos Dunlap. You do have him for one more year. I think you're going to have to pay him his bonus that he more than earned for you. He bet on himself. He was right. But I think you'd probably like to structure that instead of a one-year deal into a more favorable three-year deal. So to me, those are the first two pieces before you go out in free agency or you look at that offensive line. You have to figure both those two guys out first.
That is Blue 88. Good stuff. Good stuff. It was fun today. So a lot going on, that's for sure. We'll see. Hopefully this isn't the beginning of the end of this whole run.
It will be.
It also
kind
could
of
be an on story. We don't know yet. I mean, yeah. This could kind of go in any number of directions. We've yet to hear from Pete on this, and Pete handles these things pretty darn well. No one is better at dealing with this kind of garbage than Pete Carroll.
It diffusing all of the heat.
Yeah, he diffuses it. So my guess is that will be the next chapter in this little story here, is Pete finding a way to just diffuse everything. You know, we didn't even get to talk about the halftime show and all the pomp. What'd you make of the Super Bowl production?
What did you say earlier? Meh?
Meh? Yeah, there was a lot of meh. Meh.
Yes.
Like the national anthem with the country guy.
Eric Church.
And, yeah, and that, was she like, I don't know who the woman was. Like, it was a nice idea.
Yeah.
I thought it would be better if they had played the national anthem, though. Like to the tune of the national anthem. It seemed like they had created a new tune.
Yes.
For the national anthem instead of the one that we've all used like forever, like the Francis Scott Key version.
Pretty famous.
And I think you get into a broadcast too. And, you know, one of the things that makes Romo so great is just like childlike fun.
Yes.
And I think you get into that stage and it's almost like, hey, just let the game be the game. Ugh. Hey, just get out of the way. And I don't think it worked.
Yeah, then he gets kind of exposed because he's not that good at that.
Head.
Yeah, that's not his strength.
He
at
was
all.
In his head, worried and nervous. He was going to do something.
You know what
wrong.
He did do once, and I forget what he said, and that I like. He takes little shots of Jim Nance along the way, and like kind of gets Nance off his spot, and Nance seems to like it.
He does.
He seems to really enjoy it and laugh about it, and I kind of enjoy that. That's my favorite Romo part. And then the weekend, like, I think the weekend's fine. I am not like, I'm trying to, I'm not old man. It's like, well, kids today, the weekend, like he's fine. I'm not sure he really has enough juice to be the only act at the Super Bowl.
The only thing on the camera the entire time was the weekend.
He's not that, right?
Well, like, that and the zombies with the
But that's
masks.
Fine. Like, they just haven't, like, whatever. That's modern.
That's art, Brock.
Modern. Oh, sorry.
That's
sorry.
Part of his thing. Did you know,
okay, fine.
That's what production looks like.
I had to do
like
some research. Did you know that that's a part of his whole spiel?
Yes.
Is that he believes that he's making a statement against the fakeism of Hollywood, where people have plastic surgery all over their face.
He went around like he had plastic surgery for like a few weeks. And yeah, I've heard about that. But that's fine. Like, whatever. None of it bothered me. Like, that's the best we can do right now. I just feel like we could have had some, like very. I don't know. Just I can't imagine watching that and being like, "This is terrible." Because it wasn't terrible. He's fine. He's talented. He sang live. Credit to him. That's cool. But also, like, I can't imagine watching being like, "Yes, that was great. That was awesome."
Thank you.
It's too bad. You just polarizing in one direction or another. All right, Brock will be back next week. I think maybe even start talking a little baseball. I think we're just about ready for that. So. Enjoy the rest of your week, and the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!